Approximately 40% of New Zealanders display neurodiversive traits. Neurodiversity can include autism, ADHD, obsessive compulsive disorder, Tourette syndrome, and many more. On Take It From Us today, we talk with two men using their own experience with neurodiversity to help others. Rich Rowley has ADHD, and he wanted to develop a new certification system to help neurodiverse people into work and to stay there. The name given is Brain Badge. Rich wants it to act in much the same way as the gender tick or the rainbow tick, so employers can show support for neurodiverse people. I started by asking Rich what he wants Brain Badge to look like.
It's going to be a 5-year commitment that organisations take out with us, where they'll have a process of looking at where their organisations at in terms of supporting neurodiverse employees, putting together, understanding what the gaps are and putting together a plan for how they're going to address those. And each 12 months, they'll kind of track where they get in and resubmit that. So over the course of 5 years, hopefully all of those gaps will be addressed.
Right. So it's kind of like the rainbow tick. Is that same sort of lines?
Yeah, I mean, we were inspired by organisations like Rainbow Tick, Green Tick, you know, Gender Tick, Accessibility Tick. You know, it's leverages a nice game mechanic, and organisations understand them, what they are. I think that we had a bit of a unique challenge with neurodiversity, because neurodiversity's it's kind of where the Pride movement was, you know, 50 years ago. It's not really understood, and very, very few organisations have even begun talking about it. So I think one of the challenges we had was that we couldn't make it a compliance-based certification, because it would take organisations a long, long time to tick all of the boxes. So like I say, it's rather than it being put a tick in every box to show what you're doing, it's really about understanding what your gaps are and assisting you with things that you can do to fill those gaps.
What type of neurodiversities are we talking about?
There's lots of them. I mean, there's, you know, ADHD, autism, fetal alcohol syndrome, brain injury, dyspraxia, dyscalculia. There's a big long list of them, it's like I say, it's just a diverse way of experiencing the world and thinking. That can lead to, you know, some debilitating challenges in some circumstances. But really, you know, I'm legally classed as disabled, but I find it very hard to think of myself as disabled. And what I discovered through my previous work experience was that actually my brain thrives well in certain problem spaces, which tend to be very chaotic or complex. And that's where I'm designed and built to function. But 90% of the world exists in kind of more obvious problem spaces. And that's where I have problems because of my brain differences. So that's the way that I like to think about my particular neurodiversity. You know, not in terms of deficits or disorders, just that actually I kind of like fill a niche, and it's a much needed niche. And it's, you know, it's actually good to be neurodiverse and have a different brain. So,
yeah, and see it as a blessing, maybe. I've heard that being said before.
Yeah, I mean, it's like all things, it's a blessing and a curse in equal measures, you know. I really like the kind of social model of disability, you know, that you're not disabled by a condition. It's, you know, society's expectations and way of being that's actually the disabling factor. That's very much the case, I think, with neurodiverse people. You know, everything's a challenge for us, because the more neurotypical mainstream society has certain expectations of how people should behave, respond, interact, and everything like that. And that can be very tough and challenging, and quite often debilitating. You know, I'm a 50-year-old white privileged male who's got a law degree. I've got a master's in computing. And I'm, you know, not a dumb person, but I'm actually terrified to go into my bank and have an interaction with the bank. It's just incredibly difficult and challenging, and I always end up getting frustrated and quite often leaving with no outcome that I wanted. So
as part of the drive here then to change our expectations,
just to understand that different people think differently and experience the world differently and not try and force them into this one size fits all box. I mean, one of the things that I hope to, there's lots of stuff that I want to achieve with it, but one of the things is about empowering neurodiverse people to think differently about themselves. You know, it's still very much the case that we go through a school system that wasn't designed or built for us structurally. And it's, you know, despite the efforts of the people in that system to try and change things at a real fundamental level, it's just not built for us. So you're kind of excluded and made to feel different and odd and unusual, and that there's something wrong with you and that you're broken, that you need fixing. And yeah, I think one of the main things that I'd really like to achieve is just empowering neurodiverse people to just to love themselves for who they are and appreciate that you're like everybody. You've got certain strengths and you've got challenges, and it's about making the world more aware of what our strengths are and supporting us around some of our challenges so that we can, you know, thrive and just add more value to organisations.
And Rich, will the raised awareness here perhaps embolden people to front up for, say, a job interview and say, look, I have ADHD? Because I don't imagine many people, I imagine, would I be right in saying that most people would want to keep that to themselves currently?
Yeah. Even though, like, at my previous workplace, even though I had a really psychologically safe workplace and I was getting all of the support that I needed, it took me ages before I dared to say anything. And my ex-wife works in HR and recruitment, and I remember telling her, somebody else at work, the one person at work in you kept telling me I should tell my boss, and I kept talking to it with my ex-wife, and, you know, she was adamant that I shouldn't say anything because of how neurodiversity is perceived. You know, if you take ADHD as an example, that's perceived as a deficit and a disorder. Well, that's not going to your boss with great news, is it? So I think that's once again, it's another reason why we're doing Brain Badge. It's not about forcing people to kind of like out themselves to the managers at work. It's about creating an environment at work where somebody like me might be experiencing some difficulties and then actually going, oh, my organization's doing Brain Badge. I might feel a bit safer to go and have a conversation then with somebody about my particular experiences and challenges. That's, you know, it's to try and make it easier to have those conversations.
So eventually you had the conversation with your boss. How did it go?
It changed my life. I blurted it all out. She said, the first thing she said was, oh, I knew. And I remember thinking, oh, crap, I thought I was much better at hiding it. But she said, I didn't know what you got, but I knew you were different, and that's why I want you to work for me. And that kind of took everything that I thought about myself and about having my kind of diagnoses, and it really flipped it on its head. I'd never, ever, ever, up until that conversation, considered it to have any value or be anything special. So it turned the whole thing totally on its head. And it's, you know, that's still a thing that I'm still trying to deal with. And, you know, I'm trying to undo 40 plus years of thinking about myself in a certain way. And it's very hard to undo that. But it was a very, very, very profound moment in my life, that conversation was. And I was, I'm, I, constantly think about how fortunate I was not only to work for that organisation, but to have somebody leading it who had that kind of perspective.
But others, I guess part of the story here is that others are not as fortunate. And if we looked at unemployment rates for people with neurodiversities, they're much higher than for other people.
Yeah, it's massive, but it's not just the unemployment. So there's this massive challenge with neurodiversity. Nobody knows the numbers. So it's like with the numbers, you're only talking about the ones who have kind of like extreme enough to have got spotted. If you look at ADHD, I think in the past few years, number of diagnoses in the United States has gone up from 6% to something like, you know, just under 11% or something like that. And people talk about an explosion of ADHD as if it's catching and there's some reason for it. It's just nonsense. It's like we've always been here. We're always going to be here. It's just nobody's really noticed us. And still, I still personally believe that we're only kind of catching, you know, the edge cases. And so what that means is, you know, that there are much higher numbers of us out of work than perhaps in other diverse groups. But on top of that, there's huge numbers of us already out there in the workplace. The big challenges in this is a lot of people themselves don't know. You know, I live in a bit of a weird world because I'm kind of out and I do talks with people about this sort of stuff. I get approached by people online all the time who were in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even older, who were just getting diagnosed and they've been out in work. And it's like work is very often a very challenging experience for everybody. But it's like if you're neurodiverse, it's like you can add 40% level of difficulty on that. And, you know, the well-being impacts of that are huge. I mean, if I had to describe my life before I went to work at the Mind Lab, it was basically 90% of my energy every day was spent just trying to keep my head above water. You know, and then you're so close to sinking, it doesn't take, somebody only has to throw a couple more things at you and that's it, you go under. And, you know, that's when your mental health suffers, you go into depression. And it's a massive, massive issue, not just in terms of unemployment for people who, you know, are neurodiverse, but also the ones that are already out there in the workplace and probably don't even know that they're neurodiverse.
So, Rich, tell us when the certification system is ready to go and also the corporate support that you've already received.
It should be launching in July. So we've got three really awesome founding partners. We've got Auckland Transport, The Warehouse Group and Kiwi Bank. And I suppose one of the, we're neurodiverse, so everything's different. So rather than us actually building the certification and then just going to businesses, this is what it is. I believe in human-centered design. So what we're doing is we're working with those founding partners and they're actually helping us co-create the certification. So we're building it together. So we've actually just finished our first 8-week design sprint with our first two founding partners, Auckland Transport and The Warehouse Group. And that's now given us everything that we need to get the first version out. And then later in the year, we'll be going through that same process again with more people at AT, The Warehouse Group and Kiwi Bank and improving the certification. So it's whatever the certification is when it launches, I believe it, you know, there's a Japanese concept called Lean, Kaizen, change for good. And it's this idea that whatever you've done is never finished and you can always improve it. So that's very much the approach that we're going to take with our certification. You know, it's not going to be this thing that we launched this year and it's going to be the same 10 years later. We'll launch it in July and by Christmas it will have changed and improved. So.
And to get involved with Brain Badge and to speak with Rich Rowley, check out the website brainbadge.org. Well, Corey Tahuia is an enthusiast. He loves music. He's a rugby coach and keen quiz goer. Corey also lives with obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. This past October, he was announced as one of the faces of New Zealand Mental Health Foundation's campaign for Mental Health Awareness Week. He's passionate about sharing his story in the hope it will help others to tell theirs. I asked Corey to tell us about his life's journey living with OCD.
I've experienced what they call OCD since the age of 12, so I'm 50, and I really only I got diagnosed when I was 38. So from 12 to 38, I didn't talk about it, tell anyone, and I hid it for that long. And even from 38 to now, to 50, I don't talk about my OCD. No one knows I've got OCD until now. No one knew apart from family, no one knew about my OCD. People go, that we just didn't know that about you. How did you hide it so well? And that's what we do. I think a lot of people on mental health journeys, they hide it from their loved ones and from their friends and family. So it's just what you do because of the shame that's associated with it.
And what was it about this week that enabled you to feel like it was the time is right to be telling people?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've been thinking about going public for a long time. Whether I just did it on my own Facebook page or whatever. In fact, when I completed my therapy a few years ago, I was going to announce to the world that, well, I've just completed my therapy for OCD and just put it on my Facebook page. So it's been something I've been thinking about a long, long time. I just didn't know what kind of avenue I could do it with. The Mental Health Foundation presented the avenue to me. Here's a chance. Yeah, I don't have to do anything, but they interview me and they put it out there. And I just, that's all I had to do. So it was fantastic. I didn't have to do anything else, so...
We often hear from people who have conditions and syndromes and whatever it might be that they have been dealing with in their lives, and the moment they get a diagnosis, it clicks into place and can be of a great relief. Was that what you experienced 12 years ago?
Yeah, it was. I don't live by my diagnosis or labels. When I actually got my diagnosis, it gave me something to identify. And I thought, well, that's what I've been doing all this time. Yeah, I've got a name for it. It was a relief to get that diagnosis. I like probably a lot of people who think this OCD is about cleaning. And that's what I thought. I thought, no, it's not me. I'm not an obsessive cleaner. As I learned about OCD, there's five or six different types of OCD that affect people, and the cleaning is one of them. But I have another type of OCD. And I just think, oh, okay, so this is still OCD, and this is what I do, and I fit into this category. So it was actually quite good to learn that. Because I just say, oh, I'm not the greatest cleaner out there. I shouldn't announce that on public radio. All these documentaries that you see on TV are about obsessive cleaning or hoarding and things like that. And it's not where I fit in. So actually, when they told me I had OCD, that's my first thought. I don't fit into those categories. Mm. Oh, there are other types of categories. So it was good to learn that. And I just fit into another category. So that was interesting to find out.
What about your OCD category would you like to tell us about today?
So I'm a checker. I think that's what, there's different names for it. But I think we all get times when we go, do I lock the door? I double check it and I lock the door. Or did I turn, the great one is about power, did I turn the heater off? That's the classic. So I think, everyone it has a moment where they've, I better double check if I turn the heater off. So with me, it would be, do they turn the heater off? Yes, I turn the heater off. That's great. But then my thoughts would turn to something like, you sure you turned the heater off? You better check again, because if you didn't turn the heater off, maybe a fire might start. So it gets that really ugly thoughts in your head that something disastrous might happen. So I'll go and double check again. I'll turn the heater off. And even though I've turned the heater off, I go back to double check again. And the thoughts just keep on playing with your mind. Your mind just keeps on playing with you, saying, you sure you checked that? And you get, it gets into that double, that checking type of routine. So I think that's where I was. Mm. That's certainly where I was. And a lot of people can associate with just making sure you double-check for something's turned off. That's when it's repetitive and it turns into that obsessive compulsiveness. That's what's
happening. Yeah.
Well, for me, that's when it was okay.
And in those situations, Corey, do you remember turning the heater off so you know that it's turned off?
Oh, I mean, when I was younger, I would listen to it completely and doubt myself. But even if I know I've turned the heater off, I know I've turned it off. But and so you get frustrated because you're still going back to check. So that's where the frustration gets in because you know you've turned it off. You know you've taken the plug out of the wall, but your mind's still telling you to go and double check. So you get frustrated for yourself for listening to your mind. Sounds weird, but you get frustrated yourself for listening to your mind telling you to go and turn the heater on, all the thoughts that are coming through your mind.
Yeah.
And it's a strange one. And I think that. I think by the time I was 15 or 16, so my OCD started when I was 12, and by the time I was 15 or 16, I knew it wasn't what I should be doing, and I shouldn't be following those commands of my thoughts to do stuff. But I couldn't fight it. I was trying to fight it, and it was really hard to fight it. And you just get sucked into this. It's like walking against a headwind, trying to fight it. If you're walking against a headwind, and your body's... physically it's hard and the wind's blowing your face and mentally it's taking... That's what it's like for me to ignore my compulsions at the time. It was like walking through a heap when I was so drained and tired that I couldn't ignore those compulsions and I kept on doing them. That's very interesting. It's very interesting. You learn a lot about yourself. So
yeah, I can imagine. What do you think it's cost you over the years?
Oh geez, good question. I don't know. I mean, I've managed to achieve a lot as well. So, I mean, I got a good education. I went out and fought for a good education. I've had some good jobs. But I mean, the toll on my body, mentally and physically. I mean, I was doing up to eight hours a day of OCD rich checking. And most of that was done at night because you can't really do it during the day when there's other people around. So I had to hide it from people. So most of it was at night. So I wasn't getting a lot of sleep. And it took a physical and mental toll on me when I was my late 30s. One morning I went to get up to go to work and I got to the top of my stairs at my old flat and I couldn't move my legs to go downstairs. So I just sat at the top of the stairs and I was suffering depression at the same time. So I just sat at the top of the stairs and rang my old boss and said, I can't move down my stairs. And she went, oh, you hurt? And I went, no, I just can't move my legs. And she was really good. She just said, Corey, do me a favour, go to bed, get some sleep, and then ring your doctor for me. And let me know what's happening from there. And that's when it all started. So, yeah, I had to leave that job. So it cost me that job. I'm in and out of part-time employment for the last 10 years. So it probably took me 5 years to build after going through my treatment, my therapy. All that kind of took 5 years to get my confidence to go back into the workforce, in which I managed to get a really good part-time role with a peer support line here in Christchurch. So that was about 2000. So it probably cost me 5 years of work. Well, it's a good question you asked, actually. I have to think about that. Yeah, so I was out of work for 5 years, and then I've been in part-time work until August this year for the last 5 years. So at least I got back into the workforce, and I was comfortable working part-time. But unfortunately, that current role stopped in August, so... So I'm actually unemployed. I'm looking for a job, everyone. Sorry.
What tools do you now have?
I think the best thing for me is to understand that OCD is an anxiety disorder, and when my anxiety's up, likelihood that my OCD will increase. So the first thing I've realised is I always have OCD with me. But if I can memorialise the effects, the OCD I have during my life, during my day, that's great. So one of the tools we use at the Society's unit was intention training. So, I mean, intention training is like building and strengthening your mind and the brain. And the brain's a muscle. It needs to go to the gym sometimes. So it's about focusing. Attention training is having a lot of different sounds going at once. And need to be a command to say, listen to the bells, or listen to the trains, or listen to the bus. It's just being able to, when there's so much stuff going on, it's about focusing on different things. And within that noise, noise background, and focusing on different noises at the time. And that helps strengthen your mind. And when you're doing things like a detached mindfulness, which is another thing that's useful, you can actually helps you really focus on that mindfulness. So those are the two things I took from the training. And just being aware that it's just a thought. Your mind, it's just a thought in your mind. By the time I'd finished my therapy, I looked at my OCD as a cheeky child trying to get me to do things or trick me. Like, I'm not listening to you today, mate. Mm. You can be cheeky as much as you want in my mind, but I'm not going to listen to you because I know that everything's okay and I don't have to check something and the world's not going to end.
That voice in your head, have you put a name on him or her?
No, I didn't. It took me a long time to get them down to, that voice was a number of things. It was something evil trying to trick me. I mean, over the years, I've had different interpretations of the voice. But the more I gave it something, more I gave it something powerful, and more powerful it was on me. So when I'm taking it down to just a cheeky child trying to trick me, I don't have that association. It's not that powerful anymore. But if I gave it any power, it would really affect me more. My OCD would increase. So a cheeky child, I go, "Look, mate, it's all good. I know... You know, I know you're just trying to have a bit of fun with me, and I'm not gonna listen to you today. It's all good, swears." And we'll go, okay. And it will. The voice is just my own mind. It's my own thoughts. So it's like, sweet, and it'll shut off. So it's great. If I gave it any more attention than it actually is needed, then it would probably be more powerful.
Corey, tell us about IPS, International Peer Support, and your involvement there.
Intentional Peer Support.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Intentional Peer Support.
Yeah, so Intentional Peer Support started in the United States in the 60s and 70s. It was founded by Sherry Mead. So that's something I came to, and that's been a big part of my own recovery, my own journey in terms of dealing with my OCD and my depression and stuff. So I got trained as an intentional peer supporter in 2016, and I went on. I would volunteer for a line called Warm Line, which is a peer support line. And there's a lot of things about intentional peer support. We don't see people as fragile. We see people as strong, and especially if you've been on a mental health journey, we see you as a survivor and strong. And I think a lot of systems are set up to do good, but they kind of keep people as fragile. And I think if we can see people as strong, even if they don't believe it, if we can reinforce the fact that we see them as strong, that's a big part of them to go on their journey, to help them on their journey. We don't live by our labels, so we don't live by our diagnosis. Some people get their diagnosis and it can shut them down. It can really shut them down. Or it can really have a lot of effects on them. My diagnosis is just part of who I am.
Right.
It's part of my journey. I'm still the same person I was before I got my diagnosis. Love my rugby, I coach rugby, I love my cuisine, etc., etc. I do all those things still, before and after my diagnosis. So I don't need my diagnosis of OCD. where some people, their diagnosis take control of their life. And I guess the thing about intentional peer support is it's about walking with someone instead of doing for someone. So we're walking with people on their own journey today. We're not going to dive in and help them. We're walking with someone so they find out their way to their own path to support themselves. So yeah, a lot of systems set to do for we're walking with, which I think is the difference. So intentional peer support has really helped me. I've become a trainer now, which I've been a trainer for the last couple of years in intentional peer support. So that helps too. Passing on what I've learnt in my own journey with a framework, training others as other volunteers for my our online, which is operating. That's really helped as well.
Yeah, and what has the mentoring meant to you, Corey?
The mentoring was great. I mean, all credit to online, and the mentoring was my first type of job since my breakdown, since OCD came around, I was diagnosed. So it gave me confidence I could work when your mental health's affected your CV for 5 years, it doesn't look good when you're trying to apply for jobs and you're trying to explain your absence of 5 years. When you're on your journey of, recovery, it's quite scary.
Yeah.
Because you've got to explain to people what happened for the last 5 years. So when I applied for the Warm Minds mentor job, it gave me confidence that I could actually work again. It gave me confidence that an employer trusts me. And it started, it was such a confidence boost to have that role. And then to become a trainer in IPS was another confidence boost and another employer does see confidence in me that I can do things. So I think it's just a gradual confidence boost to get more and more as the work came on. Especially after, when I was at university, I was all about high power paid jobs, have a security, a career, looking to be financially set up. And then at 38, I'm unemployed, on the dole, and it got nothing, and got to start rebuilding myself from my mental, as part of my mental health journey. So it was a big shock. It's a big shock to end up employed, earning good money, and then you're paying off bills with, unfortunately, your benefit money. You're paying off working bills with benefit money. It's not easy. The shame is not as big as it was when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, but the shame is around the mental health is still there, and I think the shame is the one thing that stops people sharing. They feel that they're different, or they're broken, or they're wrong, or they're not right, and none of that is true. In fact, if you're on a mental health journey, you're actually really strong and a survivor, and share it with someone. Share that journey no matter what it is. Share whatever you're feeling, your thoughts with someone, and get the support you need. Because if you don't, if I could talk to someone when I was 15 or 16 or 17, I would have.
Right.
And I think it would have saved a lot of stuff in my life. But I didn't feel that, it was a hard time and there was a lot of shame around. So no matter what you're feeling, if it's OCD or whatever you feel is going on for you, if it's depression, please talk to someone about it and share it, because it's going to be, I think, a good step. Mm. And it might be some challenges on your path, but it's going to be better in holding it in for yourself, because that's when it doesn't go well.
Thank you for listening to the Take It From Us podcast. A special thank you to our guests, Rich Rowley and Corey Tahuia. Our show is produced by Karen Murphy. Our sound engineer is Paul Hannon at Planet FM and is hosted by me, Kent Johns. We're proudly supported by Ember Korowai Takatini. You can follow the show on Facebook. Please drop us a note to say hello. We'd love to hear from you. Stay safe.
rolled over in they new V. The good life, let's go on a living spree. Shit, they say the best things in life are free. The good life, it feel like Atlanta, it feel like LA, it feel like Miami, it feel like NY. Summertime shy, so I wrote the good, y'all pop the trunk, I pop the hood, Ferrari. And she got the goods, and she got that ass, I got to look, sorry. Yo, it's got to be, cause I'm pleasing, haters give me the salty looks, Larry. Sticky told me, go ahead, put the style up, and if they hit the let them hate, and watch the money pile in. Like, come for mine, I got the shine. Like, I don't have love in the sky. Like, I come for mine, I got the shine. Girls who ain't on TV cause they got more
ass than the models.
The good life, they keep it coming with the bottles. And she feel booze like she bombed out of Apollo. The good life, it feel like Houston, it feel like Philly, it feel like D.C., it feel like V.A. or the Bay, or yay. Hey, this is the good life.
Welcome to the good life.
Only tell me what's good. My only got a problem when you in the hood.
Welcome to the good life.
I'm in the hood. The only thing I wish.
I wish you could.
Welcome to the good life.
You probably think you could, but I don't think you should.
Welcome to the good life.
Hit some brain with it. As she said, I never seen snakes on a plane. Whether you broke or rich, you gotta get this. Having money's that everything that heaven it is. I was splurging on trips, but when I get my car back activated, I'm back to Vegas. Cause I always had a passion for flashing. Before I had it, I closed my eyes and imagined.
I come for mine, I got to shine.
Now throw your hands up in the sky.
Not a little bit of this, but I don't know yet. Shut it. Papa. Original lover, lover. Catch your groove, girl. Catch your groove. That's right.
I want the man allowed to make you moist and wet. I want the man allowed to make you moan and sweat. I want the man allowed to make you scream out your chest. Allowed to make you moist and wet. I want the man allowed to make you moan and sweat. I want the man allowed to make you scream out your chest. Sweet succulent and fire, I think when you're my darling divine. I love the way you move and all the way you design. You're all the light from my mind, forget that corny line. Now let me hit you off now with this question sign. You seem to be the type for me to wine and dine. A little candlelight dinner toasted over some wine. Well, I will hit you off now with this lyrical rhyme. Mr. Lover, keep you rocking. Mr. Lover, keep you rocking. Mr. Lover, keep you rocking and swing. I'm Mr. Lover, keep you rocking. Mr. Lover, keep you rocking. Mr. Lover, keep you rocking and swing. Singer.
Never ever gonna let you. Once I get my hands on you.
Love me, love me, sick machine.
Ooh, boy, I love you. Never ever, ever gonna let you. I hope you feel the same way too.
Step in.
and my caravan of love. Now I can love you down and give you hot oil rubs. Deliver my wet kisses with embrace and hug. Then I just sweet silky body on my Persian rug. While we be sipping cocoa from the same old mug. And reading fortune cookie from the Chinese crop. A little some great grass like with some cool rubber dub. A little longer reminisce in the hot tub. I'm Mr. Lover, keep her up to Mr. Lover, keep her up to Mr. Lover, keep her rocking and swing. I'm Mr. Lover, keep her rocking, Mr. Lover, keep her rocking, Mr. Lover, keep her rocking and swing. Singer.
Go!
Me love me sick machine. You walk a real love machine, girly, girly. Woo! I hit the big tweet, the she's a girly, girly. Girl, you look the moon and scream a girly, girly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Shut. Girl, you're unique. Now let me take a whiff of that sweet physique. You're the only girl I like to make my heart stop beat. Give me a breathless kick and heartless beat. To meet a lady of your caliber is an honor indeed. Leave a lasting impression for weeks and weeks. I wanna throw rose pebbles to your humble feet. Let me gently on my sheet and exercise you to sleep.
Mr. Lover, Mr. Lover, Mr. Lover. Mr. Lover, Mr. Lover, Mr. Lover.
I love my sick machine.
Ooh, boy, I love you. Never, ever, ever gonna let you. I hope you feel the same way too.
Back to the shadow, and my eyes. Don't leave me alone. Deep into the night.
Please don't leave me like this.
We'll be right back.
how we do it. It's Friday night and I feel alright. The party's here on the west side, so I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. Designated driver, take the keys to my truck. Hit the shawl cause I'm faded. Honey's in the streets, say money, yo, we made it. It feels so good in my hood tonight. The summertime skirts of my guys and can I. All the gangbangers forgot about the drive-by. You gotta get your groove on before you go get paid. So tip up your cup and throw your hands up and let me hear the party say, I'm kind of buzzed and it's all because
this is how we do it.
South Central does it like nobody does.
This is how we do it.
To all my neighbors, you got much flavor.
This is how we do it.
Let's flip the crack, bring the old school back.
This is how we do it.
This is how we do it. All hands are in the air and wave them from here to there. If you're an OG Mac or a wannabe player, you see the hood's been good to me ever since I was a lowercase G. But now I'm a big G. The girls see I got the money, $100 bills, y'all. If you were from where I'm from, then you would know that I gotta get mine in a big black truck. You can get yours in a 6-4. Whatever it is, the party's underway. So tip up your cup and throw your hands up and let me hear the party say, I'm kind of buzzed, it's all because
this is how we do it.
South Central does it like nobody does.
This is how we do it.
To all my neighbors, you got much flavor.
This is how we do it.
Let's flip the track, bring the old school back.
This is how we do it.
I'm kind of buzzed, it's all because upon a time in 94. Montel made no money and life show was slow. And all they said was 6'8", he stood. And people thought the music that he made was good. Delivered DJ and Paul was his name. He came up to money, this is what he said. You and OG are gonna make some cash. Sell a million records and we're making the dash. Oh, I'm buzzing because
this is how we do it.
Sounds like you're dancing like nobody does.
This is how we do it.
I'll never come back on an old school track.
This is how we do it.
I'm kind of buzzed, so because
this is how we do it.
So central does it like nobody does. Nobody does. Oh, it's party time.
This is how we do it.
Straight up coming from the west side.
This is how we do it.
Oh, she's got the flavor. Yeah.
Right next to you. But it's calling on. Shake it, shake it, shake it.